Everyone is on.
Introducing
Pretty Girls Love Real Estate. Stories of everyday women breaking barriers and building wealth through real estate.
Let's get it.
Boss. B-O-S-S.
Hello, hello. Thank you again for tuning in this week's episode of the Pretty Girls Love Real Estate podcast. I'm your host, Jessica Washington, and I'm super excited again for this week's guest. This week, I have my soror here from my chapter at the University of Maryland College Park. We represent Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated, Eta Epsilon chapter. Who you know doing better? Her name is Maisha Suber, and she is killing the game in real estate and property management in the Washington, D.C. market. As people know that listen to the show and know me, I'm from Washington, D.C. originally, so it was super important for me to have somebody to come on and talk about what's going on in the market there. I haven't lived there personally really in the last like 4 or 5 years, but every time I go home, there's something new being built. There's new laws changing. There's new developments every day. So I'm really excited to hear about what's going on down there because I'm interested in investing myself in the future. So she's a great expert in the market. She's been transacting there for many, many years. So I'm excited to have her on. All right, Maisha, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Good to see you.
Of course. So before we jump way into everything that's going on with you, let's just talk about how you got into real estate, why you got interested in it, and, you know, what brought you to this point.
Okay. So back at the University of Maryland, I was scheduled, you know, I did the five-year plan, the awesome five-year plan. So my fifth year, I actually only had about one class. And there was an older Terp. He had put out a message to his friends. He was looking for someone to help him, like as an office assistant for a couple hours a week. Back then, I was hustling. I was always working. I was fitting in hours wherever I could fit in hours. And so I was like, you know, I could probably do that. I can do some admin support. And his name was Dan Crosby. He's actually a member of Kappa Alpha Psi from the University of Maryland College Park. And I went to help him. I started off probably like 5 or 6 hours a week. And little did I know at that time that he was getting his real estate business started, and he was really starting to grow, and he, you know, he needed really more back-end transactional support. And so that was 2003, and worked with him from 03. By 05, I'd had my license, and I was helping him to manage a team. Ultimately, we had about 12 agents that we managed, and we started off working at RE/MAX. And it wasn't something that I went to school for. I didn't plan to fall into real estate at all. I was a journalism major. I was going to be in print. I wanted to write stories for the newspaper. But when those job offers came through, and they were very, very low, so low, I'd probably still have to go home every week. Parents would still have to support me. I just kind of was looking at real estate like, why should I not try this? You know, seeing, you know, back in 03, 05, it was, and I'll probably talk about this a little bit later, but it was the Wild Wild West out there. I mean, you couldn't, houses weren't staying on the market for hardly 48 hours, and it was bidding wars. And, you know, I was watching Dan just write contract after contract and get them under contract and settle. And, you know, it really excited me being able to see him, and also, you know, once I got my license, helping people realize their dream of home ownership. It was definitely a path, like I said, I wasn't searching for, but being exposed and being in that environment with Dan, I couldn't say no, and I think it was probably the best choice for me.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people kind of fall into real estate through one way or another. It's not something that a lot of people go to school for, go to college for. And then once they kind of get educated and realize the opportunities that are available to real estate, about the money that you can make, the impact that you can make on your community, is what really encourages people to get involved. And that's the same way I felt when I kind of really started learning more about real estate. So cool. So you went from doing the, like, more on the transactional side of real estate, and you were also, like you mentioned, you were in that kind of 05 period when things were really hot, but then obviously you had the crash. So how was your experience through the market crash back in like 07, 08?
So 07, 08, I mean, I clearly remember it. It was October 2008. And at that time, I probably had about 6 or 7 clients that were in various stages of purchasing. But almost 100% of those clients had some sort of loan that was affected by the crash. Mm-hmm. So at the time, you know, the government, you know, had approved these loans. And, you know, unfortunately, these programs disappeared overnight. So essentially my business stopped overnight. Mm-hmm. You know, the market crashed, and I think, you know, everyone kind of was scrambling to figure out what was going on. It was also a transitional time for me in my life. I was, you know, looking at getting married, also potentially considering relocating, and, it kind of all dovetailed. So I actually left, you know, the DMV and moved out of state. My business partner, you know, Dan Crosby, again, who brought me into real estate, he stayed here with the team. And I'd say, I think everybody except for one person really stayed in real estate. Mm-hmm. And I'll revisit that later, but, you know, I kind of went, you know, had a family, got married, all of that, and kind of turned around and came back to the area in late 2014, and almost just picked up where I left off. I was completely disconnected from real estate. I was in Atlanta, then I was in New Jersey. And when I came back, I was really surprised to see just how strong the market was. And that, you know, that's what's unique about our area, is that we're a little bit insulated from the rest of the country. And we were able to withstand, I'll say DC proper was really able to withstand the market crash and came back roaring just as much as it was before. Surrounding areas, PG County, you know, they're still affected by the 08 crash. Mm-hmm. Home prices haven't returned to where they are, but in 2020, prices are moving up all across the board and in the DMV area. So, you know, I didn't, you know, whether it was, you know, divine intervention that I was already kind of thinking about moving out of the area and starting up real estate somewhere else. You know, I kind of just left, you know, during the 08 crash. But, you know, was very surprised to come back to a booming real estate market.
Okay, you kind of sound like me in my journey. Like, I plan on definitely coming back to acquire property and, you know, invest in the DC market. I just been on my own journey here, there, everywhere in between. So why do you think that, you said the DC market continued to be strong. Why do you think that is? Is it because of the limited supply, or because like most people work for the government there? What is your opinion on why it was so strong still?
I think the government has a lot to do with it, but also, you know, just the area. Everyone wants to be in DC. Everyone mm-hmm. loves the historic homes. Everyone loves the you know, all the amenities that come with the DC area. So it's a very desirable location, and that didn't change. You know, it didn't change at all. You know, it took a pause. You know, home prices definitely suffered a bit, but the demand is there, and that's in the the, you know, the residential real estate market, the investment market. So, you know, once the crash happened, you know, investors swooped in and picked up a lot of property. And so that's where you see a lot of the development, you know, not only big developers, but also just, you know, your regular investor picking up four units here and there. Because really, if you think about it, all of those people that were in the process of purchasing, whether they were purchasing multifamilies or large buildings, their strategy had to shift at that point in time. And so they had to shift to doing rentals or figuring out how to use their asset instead of what they had planned for, like flipping. Excuse me. Not COVID related, sorry.
You're all good. Okay, cool. So you you moved around, you came back to DC, and then you now got started with property management on the residential and the commercial side. So can you talk a little bit about your experience with kind of running that organization, and also what are some of the differences between your role as a property manager for residential versus with commercial spaces?
So my commercial experience is very, very limited. I do mostly residential. I've only really participated in about one transaction on the commercial side. So I would say the majority of my experience is going to be on residential, and that's what I have experience in. But on the property management side, it's still directly connected to real estate. So the pipeline into our property management company, which is Scope Property Management, we officially branded and formed in July of 2018. But our pipeline to our clients, those are our investor clients. So, and we were kind of doing that anyway, we just didn't have a property management company on the end of it. So our clients buy up properties, you know, mostly four units, multifamily buildings, and then they've got to fill them or they've got to figure out how to stabilize them. And I think what is one of the things with Scope Property Management that makes us unique is that we really are real estate advisors. So we are working with these clients even before they purchase that building, mm-hmm. letting them know, you know, what's the potential. You know, obviously you want to make sure that the rental income is going to be there. You want to make sure that you're going to be able to stabilize that type of property. With the tenant landlord laws in DC, you've got to be very knowledgeable about how you're going to plan to get that rental income. You might buy a property that, you know, has a 25% vacancy rate. You need to figure out, are you going to be able to either stabilize the property by getting tenants who are not paying to pay? Will you be able to get the subsidy programs to continue to pay? Will you be able to pass the inspections? So I think our knowledge in that area really makes us real estate advisors and puts our clients in a better position to where we can not only advise them on the front end, but also the back end. As far as property management side goes, Scope Property Management, we're one of very few management companies that really focuses and specializes in subsidy housing programs. If you know anything about the DC Housing Authority, it is very difficult to navigate if you're not familiar with the process. It's very difficult to navigate if you don't have any relationships in that building. And so between, you know, Dan Crosby, he's spent years and years and years building those relationships. And that's actually what he did after the crash. He went right into figuring out the property management space. And he started going down to the housing authority. So he switched over to rentals. He switched over to advising his current clients at the time what to do with these properties that they just purchased that they had planned on either flipping or what have you. He was able to kind of make that transition in. And so, you know, when I came back to Maryland, we linked back up. It was only natural that, you know, I also started working in this space as well. But I think property management in DC is much needed. Many of the landlords do not understand the very difficult tenant landlord laws. And I think they are written to protect tenants, but they're very, very difficult for a landlord to navigate. And they almost, sometimes they just, you'll look at something and it just doesn't make sense to you. I'm sure you've heard, many people have heard, you can probably stay in a property if you're a tenant. We've got professional tenants in DC. They know their rights, they know the laws, and they know that they can stay in your property for as long as they feel like it, and you will not be able to have any recourse unless you have a property manager who knows how to navigate those situations. So I think that's one of the things that I like about property management, because we're dealing with the buildings and the properties. You know, I'm not necessarily dealing with the high rise A-class properties. I'm dealing with, you know, the single family or the four unit that an investor bought, you know, a couple years ago, and they're just trying to figure out because they're tired of managing it themselves, and they're trying to get rent and they're trying to navigate the housing authority. So that's our space and that's our niche market. And there's just not a lot of people out there. It's so very exciting to me to really kind of see the back end of DC and see how they work. That's probably a whole nother podcast about DC and their agencies, but it's something that I really like learning and really knowing how all the different agencies interact, and they all really have some sort of effect on housing. So that's been very exciting for me the last couple of years, being involved in both property management and real estate in DC.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you really quick, and then we can move on about DC. Is there any type of special regulations or any type of things about it, because it's not a state and it's, you know, a lot of different federal jurisdictions that are involved in DC? Is there anything special about that makes it particularly challenging to operate in?
I think it's simply the tenant landlord laws that are passed by DC. You know, Mayor Maren Barry really worked hard to make sure he protected tenants, because back then, you know, they didn't have a lot of protection, and they definitely needed something in place to be able to make sure that tenants and residents were not being taken advantage of and not being pushed out of their homes. You know, gentrification is everywhere in every city, but I think, you know, that was one of Marion Barry's drives, is to make sure he protects the people. I think that has also turned into just not being able to have, to me, what's logic in some of these laws. There are levers that tenants can pull very easily to really put a landlord in a bad position. It could be honestly something as small as an outlet that can cause a landlord to miss out on rent for months and months and months. So I just think it's the local tenant landlord laws that really make it challenging. And, you know, it sometimes does turn off landlords from coming into the market. Because you've got to be in it, you got to know it, and you've just got to become a subject matter expert in that tenant landlord space before. And I would absolutely just recommend people become educated before they decide to become investors and landlords in DC, because of that specifically. We have, we have, and other jurisdictions has it too, but our TOPA laws, the tenant opportunity to purchase laws, they definitely allow for the tenants to be able to form together and purchase or stop purchase or delay purchase properties by landlords, owners, investors, whoever. They're able to, I don't know if this is unique to DC, but like I said, we have professional tenants in DC, and they know, they can almost bank that they can get some sort of payout when a for sale sign goes up. And whether they know it themselves, there are, you've got people in DC, lawyers that just specialize in going around and finding out, if this is for sale, I'm going to contact the tenants and I'm going to try to get them some money. And it, whether or not they planned on buying the property or not, it generally, because it's so complicated, comes down to the tenant and the landlord or the owner or the future owner coming to some sort of agreement financially to allow the sale to move forward.
Wow, that's interesting. I didn't know about that either. So definitely people are interested in this market and any market around the country. Like, if you're not familiar, like, you got to research and know your laws, because it's one thing to invest and get into the property. You're looking for that cash flow, but it's so many little things that can cause you to, you know, lose money, fees, be able to rent out your place. So definitely thank you for that information, because I definitely didn't know that. So that was a gem. All right, so another thing I want to shift to is that you always talk about being allergic to a 9-to-5. and I know you have a lot of different other businesses besides real estate. So can you just kind of give us a little bit of overview about that, and then how all of that kind of plays into your real estate and property management services?
Mm-hmm. So there's been a couple changes here recently. So, you know, my son is 2 years old. So when he was born, at the time we had three businesses. We had our vending machine business, our apparel business, Legendary MB, shout out legendarymb.com.
I got on the shirt. If you like looking on YouTube, shout out.
And, then my real estate business. We were doing all of that. You know, I think just naturally, I really gravitate towards entrepreneurial things. And I think coming straight out of college and going into real estate and being able to see Dan Crosby run his business, I really like that versus going into an office. I felt like there was nothing, you could only get to a certain point in the 9-to-5, and it's unlimited earning potential in an entrepreneurial job. Everything is based on you. It's based on mm-hmm. what you put in. It's based on the you know, the relationships that you foster. And so that really attracted me to, you know, not only real estate, but it also, it showed me that I could run other businesses, you know, taking the same mentality, being dedicated and focused. And I felt like I could definitely open other businesses. Legendary MV was the brainchild of my husband and his friend growing up. But, you know, I kind of, you know, I would be listening to calls or, you know, looking over the computer, and I put in my 2 cents, and then finally they were like, you know, come on, let's, since you know what you're doing, or since you think you know what you're doing, you know, I was able to really kind of just use my background, already kind of being in the entrepreneurial world, to be able to help shape it and make Legendary the brand that it is today. With the vending machines, we just wanted to do something that was different, unique, and what we felt was something that we would be able to keep long term and pass on. Okay, and this was prior to a couple of things that happened in our life. We had some medical challenges, and then had my son. And, you know, at that point we had to make a decision if we were able to kind of keep it going. And it just, it worked out better for our family at the time to, you know, go ahead and sell that business. But that was an experience in and of itself. I think that I still believe in the vending business, and I think it's for someone in a particular stage in their life. I'd consider it again. This would be like in the future. I definitely think, you know, if kids out of the house, retired, the vending machine business prior to COVID was very, I think it's very lucrative. It is very lucrative. And, you know, we had aspirations of, we had some mentors that had, you know, were making millions of dollars a year managing routes and things like that. So again, it was the entrepreneurial part of that that really drew me to that business. So now we're kind of, you know, pacing things and getting back to it. And I think, you know, right now it's legendary and real estate is what we're doing now. But the door is never closed on something else. I just think I need to get my son a little bit older so that I get a little more sleep so that I have more time to focus on something else.
Got you. No, that's vending business is something I've definitely been getting more educated about lately and interested in possibly dabbling in. So I want to talk to you more about that. We can do that offline later. But just any advice that you would give, because a lot of people now, especially with this COVID, they're realizing, they're waking up to the fact like, okay, my job isn't necessarily as stable as I thought it was. You know, millions of people are going on unemployment every week now. So what kind of advice would you give to somebody that may be interested in transitioning over from employment to being a full-time entrepreneur soon?
Have a plan. Do the research and have a plan. And do things like this. Talk to people in the industry and make sure you have the best knowledge that you can before making the jump. Many people think entrepreneurship is for them. But if you think about it, like you have to either be everything or know enough people to help you to get and be successful. So, you know, one of the things I think we learned with the vending machine business is, you know, when you start, it depends on how you start in that industry, but we started through a company and, you know, we took it just kind of face value. It's just snacks, you know, just fill the machine up. And, you know, really there's a lot more to it than that. And this, you know, not just vending, it transfers to real estate as well. You know, what is your budget? Making sure that you're budgeting, making sure that you're forecasting and projecting out. You know, especially in real estate, you get paid when you make a sale, you get paid when a deal closes. So you need to be prepared for the months where you might not have a deal. You might not have a deal for 2 months. And then you might have a really big deal. So being able to make sure that you can stay financially afloat while trying to pursue your entrepreneurial dream. And then, you know, I didn't have the transition from, you know, 9 to 5, but you know, I have a lot of friends that are currently in real estate that took that made that transition. And I think that's what they did, and make sure that they laid out their plan and really talk to people smarter than you. Like that's to me the best advice. Talk to people who are smarter than you. Don't, you know, it doesn't matter who you reach out to. Ask anybody for advice. Just keep asking. Get a no, go to the next person. So just having a plan and really looking at the entire picture and not just kind of the short term, you know, gratification. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that, you know, I learned along the way. And, you know, I really, you know, in some of my readings and things, that helped me in my in all of my businesses to be able to focus on what the plan is.
Definitely. I always talk about all the time how mentorship is so important and how it's been so important in my experiences and everything I've done. And it's, you know, definitely important to get a mentor that has actually been doing it themselves, like not just listen to somebody that is knowledgeable, they read it in a book or they watch YouTube, whatever. Somebody actually has been practicing it and has been successful and can tell you why they were successful doing it. So follow those people.
And also, and you know, in that thread of mentorship, you know, your mentor is not going to build your business for you. And that's what other people, some people need to really realize. Mm-hmm. You're only as good as you and your mentor's relationship. And your mentor is literally not, you might get a mentor that is just focused on you and they want to bring you through the fire and they're going to push you. I really think that mentorship is about that exchange of knowledge. And if you're looking for a mentor to really just tell you this, you're just going to do this, do A, B, C, D, that's not really realistic. You got to do your research on your own, and you got to use your mentor to help you either understand that industry more, or also use that mentor to help network and engage others to support your business as well. But I've seen a lot of people that'll say, "Well, my mentor didn't do anything." No, your mentor didn't help you start your business in the way that maybe you thought they were. So, making sure you have a defined idea of what that mentor-mentee relationship is, because you might need more than one. Like you said, you want to make sure that people have the direct knowledge and be able to help you in the way that you're looking. So just, you know, making sure you're taking those mentorships seriously and staying in touch. I think that's the biggest thing that I've seen in my experiences. And I, you know, I'm guilty too. Like when I was younger, it's, you know, can you mentor me? And then, you know, I wouldn't call them all the time or, you know, fall off. So, or expect like miracles to come out of one conversation. It takes time and it takes really focus and dedication to be able to enhance that relationship and make sure that everyone's getting out of it what they want to.
Yeah, I will also add to that, just make sure you're giving value to your mentor as well. And it's not just a one-sided relationship where they're telling you everything, doing everything, you know, providing all the value. Use whatever experiences that you also have that maybe they don't have to add value to their business or to their life or make them knowledgeable about something else that they didn't know. So it's a give and take and it's a win-win for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So where do you think, you know, how's the market, everything been going during COVID? And then where do you see, you know, hopefully after we clear all this out, where do you think the DC market and real estate is going from here on?
So, you know, overall home prices are actually up. Like I mentioned before, DC is just a little bit insulated. The DC area is a little bit insulated. Right now, and I'm licensed in DC and Maryland, and in both jurisdictions, I'm seeing multiple offers, you know, bidding wars, offering over list price. I think the average sales price in DC right now is about 620. It's not going down anytime soon. I think, you know, Freddie Mac put out some stats that home prices overall are up about 2.3% this year. I can see it. You know, the buyers that I'm working with, you know, I tell them like, look, we're back in this market where if you see it, you like it, we have to write an offer right now. Just because what's driving, I think primarily what's driving through COVID is the interest rates. Right now buyers are really trying to take advantage of the low interest rates. They're really trying to get the home that, you know, they would have been priced out of a year ago. They're trying to get that today. And, you know, for my sellers, the houses are not staying on the market for more than a few days before it's under contract. So the DC area is very strong. You know, you might have some counties that might be lagging here and there, but I think especially at least through the fall, I don't see this slowing down. Traditionally in the month of June, July, people are taking vacations, things slow down. I'm just not seeing that this year. So I think it's definitely strong. You've got those, like I said, those buyers that are out there that either weren't affected that much by COVID. You know, maybe they've just moved home and that's the only thing that really changed for them. They're out here and looking. And I think it's, you know, we're doing really good. Business is really booming in the DMV.
Is there any area of DC that you can still get a little bit more bang for your buck? Like, I know before it was really saturated, like even areas that were like the hood when I grew up around 8th Street, Trinidad, are like super priced out, and like Southeast was probably the last frontier, but even like Congress Heights is getting very developed now. So is there any areas of DC where you can still get a little more value right now?
I think your average home buyer is competing with investors right now. I see all areas, all my clients are all over. They're Congress Heights. I mean, Randall Heights is very hot. I don't see any particular area that you're not going to be competing against an investor. I mean, unfortunately. So either you've got your well-off family that is looking for that first home and can afford that single family. I think what I would say opportunity getting into the market is I've got some clients that are purchasing buildings and living in one of the units. So maybe a 4-unit and living in one of those units. I definitely think that's a way to enter the market into DC right now. But it's very competitive. It's everywhere. I don't see any area of the city that hasn't been untouched.
What about like PG County? Is there any areas you see that you can still get good value for?
I think PG County, you know, like I said, PG County is not necessarily, the prices didn't come roaring back like DC. You know, there's a discussion now, they're talking about whether or not taxes are going to be increased in PG County. So PG County is unique in the sense that home prices are fairly affordable. You know, even in areas that are coming up, you know, well, they've been coming up, but areas that people are investing in, Capitol Heights, District Heights, things like that. But people are still affected by the high taxes in the area. So while the home price is good, the taxes are high. And, you know, I definitely think, you know, PG County is vast. You know, you've got areas that are centered right around the Beltway that might be congested, but, you know, you've got other areas out, Brandywine, people want more space. There's definitely options in PG County, I would say, more so over some of the neighboring counties. A lot of people are looking at that Waldorf and headed down to Charles County. There's a lot of people that are doing it. And now that, you know, people aren't necessarily driving to work, like, it's kind of like, well, why not? Why not go get you some more land and some more space down there?
That's true. But yeah, Waldorf is a hike, especially from DC. But yeah, that makes sense though, because people aren't commuting as much, because that's like a good, could be like 30, 45 minute drive from DC. So
they're expanding that way, and then they're also expanding out into Montgomery County further out, you know, headed out to Clarksburg and Gaithersburg and areas that were not as desirable in the last couple of years, but people are headed out there and getting good amount of land and good amount of space for their dollar.
Cool. So yeah, if you're interested in investing anywhere in the DMV area, definitely Maisha is a great resource, and she's, you know, covered the whole scope. She won't just be, you know, getting you into the deal. She can also help you with the property management as you go forward. So for sure. All right, cool. Well, let me just wrap this up here. Thank you for doing this conversation. This was awesome. The last segment that we do is called The Fabulous Four, and it's just four questions that I ask, and, you know, whatever you think of off the top of your head, just fire away. So the first question is, what is your favorite real estate book?
So I really love Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Notwithstanding the current author's, you know, political agenda these days, but Rich Dad, Poor Dad really lays out for the entrepreneur, like, how to be successful. The points of that book, there were many points of that book. Financial literacy was, you know, the overarching theme, but I really loved how he talked about focusing on the knowledge and getting the knowledge before focusing on that dollar. you can make money, you can absolutely make money, but if you're not educated to know how to get to that next level, you're leaving money on the table. And so that was something that theme within that book really resonated with me. And then directly, he talks about real estate investment and how to do it and what to do. And I think if it's either been a long time or you've never read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I would absolutely recommend that for anybody that's looking to get into real estate.
Definitely, for sure. Definitely a life-changing book, a lot of good information. And I think it also gives you a mindset shift from being an employee and working for, you know, exchanging your time for money and really getting into the mindset of trying to develop more passive income. Mm-hmm. So love that book as well. All right. So number two question is, what advice would you give to your younger self when you were just getting started out in real estate?
I think the advice I would give my younger self is to not view real estate as individualistic. It just is, you know, unless you're working on a team, you are your own business. And I think what I would have told my younger self is to be open and really start to seek advice and have conversations and connect with other women outside of my immediate real estate circle. Because it was, you know, it was me and Dan for many, many years. And again, he's awesome, awesome mentor. But I think that in my younger years, I probably could have benefited from just reaching out to other women. And, you know, not only is real estate individualistic, but we're also kind of tribal. You know, if you work with Remax, you work with Remax agents. You work in Long and Foster, you work with Long and Foster agents. But something that I've done, you know, that has been a value to me current day is, you know, I have relationships with women that are in different aspects of the business. So, you know, I've got my friend who does only luxury, you know, real estate. I've got my friend who focuses on Montgomery County. I've got, and they're all at different agencies. You know, one of my sorors who is killing it up in Baltimore. So really kind of working towards getting a mastermind group of women together. And I think women have a specific experience in real estate. And, you know, I think, you know, just kind of not really focused on me and focused on how can I really grow in the industry and the business. I think I would have told my younger self to really start doing that earlier on.
I love that answer because that basically personifies everything I was looking forward to doing with Pretty Girls Love Real Estate. It's not just, you know, a podcast. It's really a movement to kind of educate and inspire people that there's women of color doing many different things across the real estate landscape and, you know, foster that kind of concept of networking and working together because your net worth is your network is your net worth. You know, there's only but so many things that you can be knowledgeable about and so many things that you can do yourself. So leveraging other people's experience and their knowledge in other areas where you have some shortcomings is really how you can really grow and thrive. So love that answer.
Absolutely.
Cool. The third question is, what topic do you personally want to learn more about in real estate?
So I really want to, I got a little bit involved into development in 2019, and that's just a whole other beast, and I would love to learn more about development. I'm a little bit jealous of kind of my college students and those who actually are going to school now for this. You know, back then, they didn't have these programs in real estate, and, you know, I just see the benefit and the value of someone that if they have an interest in real estate early on, they can get into all of these different aspects of development. And so, you know, being able to see a large project come to fruition from purchase to, you know, to funding. And the project that I was working on, I had a small role in it, but the project that I was working on was a tax credit deal. It was actually just approved by Mariel Bowser. It was funded. But I was also kind of in that real estate property management space of being able to help and advise them on what they're going to be doing with those tenants and what you're going to be doing with the space after they actually get funding. And so that was just super exciting and just a world that I had always heard about but never seen up close. And sitting in a room with some of the biggest players in DC that you would never know, but the people who are actually building affordable housing for residents. And that's a space that I'm absolutely going to pursue and I absolutely am going to learn more about. And I do plan on, you know, pursuing some education in that area, because it's so interesting. And why not? I think that they need all the voices that they can, you know, not only minority voices, but women voices in that space to affect change and make sure that those developers consider all aspects and all people when they're doing these projects. So that's something I'm very, very excited and interested to learn more about.
Definitely. I feel the same way about you. I'm jealous of some of these kids that can, you know, take real estate development or real estate finance when they're in college. I probably would have done that if I knew better instead of get whatever my degree was in. So definitely. And then I had an earlier podcast episode, shameless plug. Episode number 2 was with Alexis Mile. Shout out to her. She's a real estate developer in Philly. And she's mm-hmm. been doing a bunch of multi-million dollar projects in North Philly and really revitalizing the neighborhood. So she's mm-hmm. killing the game, and she's a woman and woman of color doing big up there. So,
right.
So lastly, that brings me to the last thing is give a shout out, please, to one other woman that's doing some amazing things in real estate.
So my shout out is going to our soror, Jessica Jones. She is actually like, I want to be her when I grow up. And she's actually one of the people that has benefited from this kind of education and development. She is on top of her game in DC. She's recognized in many, many, many circles. I think she got started with helping out with green initiatives and working on those for different buildings in DC. But she's a real estate development officer with its community, I don't want to say, Community Preservation and Development Corporation. So I can't say much more about her. She's just amazing. She knows her stuff. She's only gotten started, in my opinion. She's won many awards, and I just think she's unique in the sense that it's just you don't see a young Black woman come up the way that she has, and she's, and at least in my mind, has been fast. I mean, I don't know if she would say it's been fast, but she's just super knowledgeable. She, you know, was called University of Maryland. She was asked to speak there to the business school. So I really, she's my plug. I think she's amazing. I absolutely think you should talk to her as well.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Shout out. A bunch of our sorors are killing the game out here, but that's no surprise. And then shout out to all the other Black Greeks. I know we're kind of really a tight-knit family at University of Maryland. So shout out to everybody that's doing really well and thriving and doing business together from University of Maryland College Park and PhD. Cool. So how can people get in touch with you if they want to do business, if they want to find out more about the landscape in DC? How can they get in touch with you?
So, you know, I'm a realtor. I have my license with Equilibrium Realty here in DC. And so that's my residential business. Feel free to reach out to me. I don't know, phone, email. My email is maisha.suber@gmail.com, so pretty easy. And then the property management side is scopeprops.com. Take a look at what we've got going on there. You can definitely reach me through there as well. I don't have any public Facebook or Instagram specifically, but you know, definitely if you want to get in touch, I'm sure Jessica can put some links or something there for you too. But it's busy this summer. I would say if you're thinking about it, start looking now. Give me a call. I can help you evaluate, and I can even help you figure out a timeline. If it's not now, I can figure out, help you to figure out when you'd be able to purchase.
Okay, cool. And then also shout out to Legendary MV. Her t-shirt line, clothing line is pretty dope. So shout out to that as well. All right. Thank you again. This was a great episode. I learned a lot of good information about DC because, like I said, that's my hometown and I really want to invest there as well in the upcoming years. So thank you for that information about that. So, all right. Well, this will wrap it up. This was another episode of the Pretty Girls Love Real Estate podcast. Again, I'm your host, Jessica Washington. Thank you again to my guest today, Maisha Super. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.